You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library. Mr. Darling, last night I saw you reading in my dream, but I couldn't tell which book you had because your paw covered the spine. Do you recall what it was?
I certainly do, madam. It was a fairy book on the proper method of enticing the unseelie court to a masked ball.
Oh, how divine. Do you recall their instructions?
I can do better than recall, madam. I wrote them down, just before the entire book turned to leaves in my hands.
Darling, are we in a dream now?
Do you know, madam, I'm never completely sure.
Walking the aisle at your local supermarket, you push your empty, rusting shopping cart along in a cloudy state of mind. The muffled music playing overhead is familiar. It's an old song that stirs an uncomfortable memory and sour emotion from long ago in your past. A pang of disappointment momentarily tightens your stomach. As you walk, you frown and pull your crinkled shopping list from your pocket. All of the items are in your handwriting, but you struggle to make sense of them. The list reads Blurgshine, Fosskeep, Bullknout. Real-like words that have no meaning to you. Slowing to read the cereal boxes as your cart rolls to a stop. The names and characters on all of them are as confusing as your note. Jotkisp, Cron Dimples. A box marked Puckmoojies has a silly-looking spoon creature on it, being fed by a smaller spoon creature. Annoyed, you stare at the boxes, biting at a hangnail. A dull pain behind your right eye interrupts your concentration, and wincing, you fold your list, abandon your empty cart, and leave the unhelpful store. The sun is just beginning to set on this warm and hazy day. Over the entire village rests a salmon-colored hue that fills the air and sky. Feeling lighter in your step, you walk for a while, passing storefronts and businesses that you've always known, the butcher shop, shoe repair, a second-hand bookstore. Stopped by a few slow-moving cars, you pause to glance at the street sign above your shoulder. Price Street. You cross the alleyway that you remember leads to the Broom and Fang pub, and you laugh to yourself, continuing to walk another block or two. On your left, a black cat darts out from behind a planter overflowing with black velvet petunias and rubs its head against your calves, pushing you with such strength you nearly lose your balance. The cat looks up at you with bright gray eyes with yellow crescents to the side of its narrow inky pupils. As you reach down to pet the cuddling creature, it exudes a low, vibrating growl from its upturned mouth, showing you all of its sharp white teeth. With a quizzical grin, you stoop and scratch the cat's chin. Your fingers catch on the cat's dainty patent leather collar, adorned with a single dangling gemstone of labradorite. The tilting jewel flashes gold, purple, and azure-blue colors directly into your eyes, making you feel fortunate somehow. The friendly black cat stretches downward with its front claws scratching the sidewalk. It raises its rump, sticking its left hind leg straight out to complete its graceful stretch. Patting the animal's head, you quietly say, "Hey, sweetie, where are you off to today?" The cat repeats its deepened growl and slinks its body around the verdigris base of the intersecting street sign. In the dim light of the evening, you read the reflective sign out loud. Vincent and Price. Just beyond the hedge, the Grimm's Grocer's lighted sign buzzes and blinks on, glowing neon orange and green. Crossing the parking lot and stepping onto the automatic doormat, you once again pull your shopping list from your pocket. A smiling young man in a green apron quickly steers an orange shopping cart into your hands and bids you good evening. Smiling back at him, you lean your forearms on the cart's handlebar and begin reading your list. Chocolate milk, rye bread, cake mix. The entire store is bathed in soft, cozy lighting. Overhead, Fleetwood Mac's song, "The Chain," begins to thump with its trademark bass drum beat that match the pace of your footsteps. An intoxicating aroma of warm, spiced pumpkin bread drifts on the air from the rustic brick bakery. You close your eyes and take a deep breath in. Exhale and relax. Your cart glides down the neat aisles with each item on your list conveniently present at your fingertips. A large tan hand brushes yours, and a single blue spark of static electricity zaps between you as you both reach for a can of Brother Burgess's bone broth.
"Oh, I do apologize," croons the familiar voice of Mr. Darling.
Your expression brightens as you look up at him. "Please, take this one and I'll get another," he says, smiling down and handing you the can. In a slate gray evening suit, he looks as handsome as ever, his beard so neatly trimmed. Arrested by his gaze, you hear yourself mumbling courteous small talk up at him. He nods politely and then asks you point blank if you're attending the Midnight Library's Masked Ball.
puzzled, you shake your head and utter a weak response. I don't think so. I mean, I don't think I was invited. His tone drops, and he looks at you and declares, "Of course you are." A wave of tingles raise goosebumps on your skin as you stand there silently. "See you soon, and have a good night," he exclaims as he tucks a second can of broth under a black cloth in his hand basket and calmly strolls away. His presence has left you with the oddest chill, and you immediately miss his company. Your mind fills with a montage, a swirling of memories of evenings spent in the reading room by the fire, listening to the hypnotic stories of Miranda Merrick. The rush of images brings a feeling of dizziness. You recheck your list and steady yourself by grasping the cart handle and head to the checkout. Your cashier, with jet black hair and eyes to match, wears a Grimm's green apron. Her bright orange name tag reads Kathleen. She smiles and says, "Good evening. Did you find everything you were hoping for?" Still a little shaken, "Yes," is your awkward reply, as you begin to fumble the envelope of coupons in your jittery hands. "Please, let me help you," Kathleen offers. She gently takes the envelope from your hands, her slim fingers nimbly plucking the coupons from the paper pouch. "There we are. I got every single one." "Oh, you're a friend of the Midnight Library, I see," she exclaims, noticing the sticker on the envelope as she passes it back to you. "I'm a patron," you readily reply. Her head turns sharply, and she stares straight at you, her charcoal eyes warming as she smiles and says, "Excellent." She folds your receipt, lifts your bags into your hands, and politely says, "Have a wonderful night, and thank you for shopping at Grimm's." As you walk towards the exit, through the large plate glass windows, you can just see Mr. Darling stepping out from under the store's orange and green striped awning. Suddenly, the black cat leaps from the awning's edge and deftly lands upon his lofty shoulder. Without flinching, he walks off into the darkness. With your own front door in sight, you find your keys, collect your mail from the box, and let out a content sigh of relief that your long day is finally done. Well, nearly. Choosing to turn on the low lights in your kitchen, you toss the stack of mail on the table and unpack your shopping to put it away. As you lift the items into their appointed cubbies, your encounter with Mr. Darling replays in your mind. As you close the cupboard door, your eyes catch sight of the label of the can of soup you've just placed on the shelf. "Bramble soup," you say out loud, quickly reopening the cupboard door. "Bramble soup," the can reads. You blink, and the label reads, "Campbell's soup." "I need to wrap this day up," you state, shaking your head. Pouring your favorite drink and settling into your favorite chair, you put your feet up. Thumbing through the stack of mail, you assign a little title to each piece. "Bill, junk, junk, add, bill, add, junk, card, card." A lavender envelope with your name written in Miranda Merritt's distinctive handwriting. The peculiar, uncancelled stamp features a tall ship surrounded by obscure texts.
in what you assume is a foreign language. In the upper left-hand corner, the envelope bears the Midnight Library logo and no return address. Without a thought, you smile and carefully tear open the unusual mail. Just as you expect, it's strange. Immediately, a heady mix of aromatic scents escape the opened envelope. Distinct notes of the fireplace, exotic perfume, old books, wolf fur, and black tea float in the air. Inside, you find a gilded card. The paper stock both looks and feels ancient. Upon it, in sepia-toned ink, is a simple statement penned in perfect calligraphy. You are hereby invited to the Midnight Library's masked ball. Hereby invited? Who writes like this, you think, flipping the card over? The back is blank, but a small scalloped edge ticket slips from it, landing in your lap. The ticket is ornately printed, a tiny thing of beauty. You lift it to the lamplight to examine it. One side reads, "The Midnight Library Masked Ball." On the other side is a simple empty oval frame surrounded by dainty imprinted runes. There's nothing else. No other information. Confused, you flip the card over again, frowning, examining it closer, while nervously biting at the hangnail on your thumb. You inspect the envelope. Nothing. Your teeth grasp the hangnail, and you absent-mindedly tear it out, painfully ripping into the click. Now tired and frustrated, you grab the card and small ticket and force them back inside the lavender envelope. In one swift motion, a small bead of blood from your thumb makes contact with the empty oval on the tiny ticket. You lie your head back, think about your day, and fall instantly asleep. A chorus of invisible voices call out to you on the warm wind. You quicken your steps, making your way through the sea of gray, uneven headstones and wild-growing pumpkins, and dash towards the open gates of the library. Silhouetted in the dimming blue night, the sprawling Gothic mansion embedded in its risen hill looms high ahead. It's completely dark and still, without a single light or sign of life. You climb the stone steps of the surrounding hill below and pause on the landing at the top to catch your breath and stare up at the blackened manor.
"Woo!"
shouts a gravely voice from behind you, accompanied by a poke to your ribs. You leap with fright, reeling on your wobbly legs. A grotesque crimson devil springs up directly beside you in the dark. Frozen to your spot with your eyes wide behind your mask, you know you're either going to faint or run.
"Ha! Did I scare you?"
the devil asks mockingly.
"I hope we're not late,"
he adds in a tone that matches his horrific look. With a painted-on eye mask and actual flames in his eyes, he looks like something out of a nightmare. You try to regain your composure as you stand there gawking at him.
"My brother works for a special effects company in Franklin,"
he professes confidently. "Right, good job. Great," is all you can manage.
"This place looks dead."
He chuckles, then turns to look you up and down.
Well, we can't both have the wrong night. No offense, but what are you supposed to be?
He asks, his eyes narrowing around their fire. I went for forest spirit, you say, adjusting your mask made of leaves and fine feathers.
Oh, cool. I get it now, he blankly replies.
From the graveyard below, a soft white figure can be seen, clumsily hurrying towards the stone steps. As it arrives at the bottom step, it's clear that it's a woman, dressed in what can only be seen as a slapdash angel costume. Winded and wheezing, she barely climbs three steps without tripping on her billowy netting.
Did I miss it? Oh, dang it!
She calls up with a slightly southern and despondent tone.
No, I mean, we don't think so.
You call out down to her. The devil agrees with you, nodding, the flames jumping in his eyes.
Come on up,
he briskly shouts, encouraging her. It's at this moment you realize what a challenge it is for the angel on the steps. As she gathers her netted gown, she struggles to take the next few steps. Her chintzy white wig strings across her puffy face, and her homemade halo is in danger of falling off entirely. The eye holes in her glittery mask are too small, and you can't believe she can see at all, and you run down the steps to help her. Offering her your arm, she leans on your strength, puffs a few shallow breaths, and says,
I'm Daisy.
Nice to meet you, Daisy. After thinking a moment, you only give out your initials. Pointing up the steps, you muse, I believe you know Mr. Devil? He bows at the waist, but doesn't extend his hand to Daisy. The two of you reach the landing, and the three of you stand in silence, looking around for anything. Daisy lets out a honking cough, and a cloud of bats burst down from the ceiling of the veranda of the library, flocking downwards. You and Daisy instinctively duck as they swoop just over your heads. And the devil laughs and mutters,
Amateurs.
Let's try around the back.
Daisy shrugs at you, and the two of you follow the devil as he confidently walks the plateau of the hill as it trails nearby and around the library. Impossibly tall, narrow shrubs hug and hide the back portion of the building, making its true size unknowable. Walking here feels like trespassing. Turning to glance back from where you came from, a few more costumed figures can be seen emerging from the distant graveyard at the edge of the darkened woods. Fussing with her layers of white netting, Daisy lags behind a few steps and you turn to wait for her. Straightening her bent halo, she huffs in despair.
I knew I should have been a black cat. Nobody's gonna get my joke showing up here as an angel.
Amused, you reply. You look as cute as they come, Daisy. I'm sure everyone will love you, even Miss Merrick.
Oh, heck, I forgot about Miss Merrick. I just want to meet the other visitors and maybe make some friends, because we never get to talk much in the reading room. Oh my gosh, she's going to tell me never to come back or something real bad's going to happen.
Daisy, you insist, interrupting her panicked rant. You gently touch her sleeved arm. You look divine, you warmly say, smiling into her now slightly askew tiny eye holes.
Thank you,
she meekly says.
You look wonderful, too. You're like a woods ghoulie or something, right? Yes, you brighten.
Both of you realize the devil ahead of you is only politely staying in view, and you hasten your steps.
He looks back briefly, grimaces, and raises a painted eyebrow when you catch up to him.
I really do want to meet some new friends, Daisy puffs.
Why did you come? She asks as she waddles along beside you.
Oh, I'm just honored to be invited to anything here at the library. I've always wanted to be part of this spooky place and strange people like them, is your honest response.
What about you, Mr. Devil? I didn't catch your name,
calls the tiring angel. The Red Devil turns abruptly on his heels.
Mr. Devil is fine for tonight, and I have come to take Miranda Merrick by surprise. You'd have to be daft not to see I'm obviously her type, he snaps, turning his back.
And you and Daisy exchange told-off grins.
As you follow the path in the night, a strange, comforting hum permeates the ground and air. The tall, shrewd trees give way to a vine-covered stone wall. It seems to be built right into the side of a high, wide hill. Overhead, the limb of the Milky Way shines, and a blanket of Persian blue sky appears to rest on the rambling mound. The walkway comes to a halt at a tremendous Gothic wooden door, anchored on batwing hinges and framed by crafted stone columns and a risen pointed arch. The angled keystone over the door's top bears a large etched pentagram overlaid with the letters M and L. From the deeply chiseled star, wisps of whitish smoke or steam come forth. Daisy grasps your arm and sheepishly whispers, I think I'm just going to go home now. You gently tap her chubby fingers, softly saying, It'll be fine. The devil in front of you weighs in without looking back.
You certainly must stay. The more people there are dressed like you, the better I stand out. I'm joking, of course.
He remarks over his caped shoulder. And you and Daisy again exchange knowing glances. To your group's amazement, at eye level in the center of the massive door, a smaller version of the door swings open without a sound, revealing the sylvan face of a woman. The very surface of her smooth skin appears to be that of superbly carved and sanded wood, replete with a flowing grain and swirling pearls. Even her hair is an upsweep of forking branches. Her becoming eyes formed from dark-ringed knots. In a soft voice, she calmly asserts, Show me your ticket. The devil keenly raises his ticket before the eyes of the wooden woman, then steps aside. As Daisy searches the folds of her skirt of her netted gown, you produce your ticket, grasping it on both sides for the tree-like lady to view. She slowly nods to acknowledge it, and you turn to check on Daisy, who has become flustered while searching with one hand buried in a pocket of her dress, while the other wildly pats around her body. She puffs,
No, not there. Just a second. No.
Her mouth drops open, and she reaches into her cleavage to retrieve the tiny ticket, holding it up with pride.
I'm sorry, I got blood on it when I was so in my costume,
she politely offers. It's supposed to have your blood on it, the devil grumbles, then quietly adds, amateurs, as the giant door can be heard clinking to unlock from the other side. It then eases open just far enough to admit the three of you. It closes behind you with a dull thud, and a toothed iron bar slides crossways, its integrating teeth feeding into the gears of a bolted iron pentagram mounted in the stone wall. The back of the giant door is plain, with no smaller version of itself, and no sign of the wooden woman. The devil takes pleasure in Daisy's total bewilderment, and you turn to take in the confounding architecture of this place where you've arrived. Now standing in a cavernous space, a system of finished tunnels can be seen splaying out from the stone floor where you stand. Hundreds of bright yellow lanterns are evenly hung throughout the underground medieval-like fortress, illuminating crouching gargoyles seemingly ready to pounce from their precipices. The pungent air smells of damp earth and candle wax. High above, countless rib-vaulted arches support the ceiling in every direction. Your small group is so staggered by the sight of it all that you hardly notice the sound of flowing water. 10 steps from where you stand, a wide waterway separates you from the system of tunnels. The broad, navy blue river quietly flows from a dim, featureless cavern on your right. It's only once you walk to the floor's edge that you see the offshoot of other channels that lead closer to the tunnels. Daisy takes a raspy breath and loops her arm through yours. From out of the mouth of the darkened cavern, motion can be heard upon the water. Slowly, a strange boat emerges. It's wide, flat-bottomed, and seemingly constructed of whitewashed bones. In rows, long bone after long bone, line the boat's shallow sides. Between each stark bone, pockets of silken red cloth poke through, giving the entire craft the appearance of a neatly mangled corpse. Graceful curved bones at the helm support what is surely the skull of a giant, supplying the boat with its dooming figurehead. Its terrible mouth hangs open in horror. Most disturbing of all is the craft's transparent helmsman, a nebulous spectral being cloaked in a fog-like robe. As he silently plants his pole in the water, the bony barge creeps to a stop. You realize you've stopped breathing. Even the devil has forgotten himself, but he quickly recovers and steps sideways behind a trembling Daisy. A dreadful chill fills the air as the ghostly gondolier lifts his arm, making a sweeping summoning gesture towards his empty hull. Daisy tightens her lock on your arm, and you hear her teeth chatter with fear. The horrific boat remains completely still as you, with Daisy latched to your side, step into the hull. The devil pauses and looks back at the closed door before resigning himself to enter the ominous craft. An antique bench holds the three of you
and the boat immediately drifts forward with its mysterious mariner at the helm. You've never seen such a place, even in your wildest dreams. Without words in your thoughts, you're naggingly aware that you entered this place from a hill, and you are now, somehow, deep underground. The boat drifts steadily past several possible waterways and shadowy tunnels. Peering down them, you glimpse their ribbed vaulted ceilings, alcoves, statues, and staircases, their hanging lanterns disappearing into the distance. Each of the countless tunnels appears to hold unfathomable possibilities. Slick ribbons of dark underwater creatures rise and thump along the sides of your lonesome vessel. By the placement of his tall rod into the depths, your ghostly guide effortlessly steers the bone boat down his chosen tunnel. Both the devil and the angel scoot inward, clamping you snugly between them. The burnished brick archway passes overhead, and for the first time, a clearer view of the tunnel's construction can be seen, although the length of it is indeterminate. Sturdy gray blocks and natural boulders mortised together make up the ample curving burrow, and Roman-style columns line the walls, supporting the brick ribs of the ceiling. Just as your heart rate has slowed, echoes of weird laughter from far down the tunnel bounce off the walls, permeate your clothing, and reverberate in your chest. Dim, oblong niches intermittently line the stony walls of the tunnel. Some are occupied by hideous, bald, squattish-looking men with bloodless faces staring straight ahead. "Ogres," the devil smirks, as Daisy shakes her head and buries her face in the leaves of your costume and whimpers.
"Goons!"
You kindly pat her shoulder, and the cadaverous boat reels to a stop. Raising his misty robed arm, the faint apparition stands pointing to a stone staircase rising out from below the surface of the dark blue water. For a moment, no one moves. You gather your courage, take the initiative, ease out from between your close companions, and step onto the nearest step. Without turning away, you extend your open hand to Daisy, who looks worse for the wear of the boat ride, her halo drooping to one side. The devil stands up quickly, unnerving her, and she grasps your hand for help. As soon as the craft is empty, the haunting helmsman dissolves in the air, and the skeletal boat coasts away. From far back in the tunnel, a flock of flowing black shapes is moving. With a rumble of screeches and a rush of looming gloom, it careens toward you, growing in size. With Daisy in the middle, the three of you charge up the stairs to the landing above. You and the devil instinctively reach for the iron handles of a pair of heavy, primitive wooden doors, flinging them open and dash with Daisy over the threshold, then halt to a breathless stop. The great room is a blur of sparkling colors and rings with enthralling music. a myriad of costumed characters and otherworldly beings are all in motion. Some stroll along as others fly by within inches of your face. A bright entity in a shining crown of glowing ivy pauses before the three of you and affirms in a warm, layered voice. We bid you welcome. And soul-tingling feelings of love wash over you as the entity moves past. Luminous trailing images of itself drift behind it, then roll forward, uniting back into one. Daisy looks at you with a beaming smile, but the devil has folded his arms in disgust, and you follow his flaming gaze. There are at least a dozen other devils in various incarnations dispersed among the wild mix of revelers. The breezy subterranean hall is both immense and intimate, with undefined walls of billowy sheer curtains, twisting vines, and shimmering mists. In what appears to be the center, an enormous tree trunk descends from the noctilucent ceiling, its neatly braided roots disappearing beneath a prancing fountain of ruby-colored droplets that encircle and rain down on the roots of the tree. Speechless, you stand in awe of the spectacle before you. Daisy pulls an inhaler from her skirts, takes a deep puff from the nozzle, straightens her halo, and anxiously declares,
"Well, I'm gonna go try and mingle."
The devil surveys the room with literal flaming determination and states,
"And I'm gonna go find that witch."
He roughly shoves past Daisy, snagging her netting, tearing it from around her small shoulders. Her peephole mask briefly follows him. You frown and ask, "Are you okay, Daisy?" She nods, giving you a smile.
"Wish me luck,"
she cheerfully chirps, gathering her netting, and you watch her move into the fantastical mix. She successfully makes her way around the crowd, chatting and dancing with most of her fellow guests. Not everyone thinks her angel costume is humorous, and a few turn away from or mock her as she approaches them. Undiscouraged, she happily moves on. The devil seems quite capable on his mission as well, briefly humoring those who are impressed with him by doing an over-the-top flourish and staring dauntingly into their faces. Then he too moves on,
searching.
A gentle, honey-scented wind swirls around you as you lift your mask. Your hungry eyes dart and chase all of the various visions you can see. Without taking a step, you find yourself ringed by sprightly beings, both big and small, mostly dark and some light, all dressed in ethereal gowns and suits of leaves and flowers. Some are royalty, attired in courtly crowns and jewels, while others merrily cavort in bluebell hats and little else. They know you. Their eyes twinkle with mischief and magic, and your feet lift from the floor as you're pulled into the crowd of merrymakers, flying in a weightless dance with the enchanting host of forest fairies. You lose all sense of time as you joyfully tumble and wheel with your delightful company around and around the woven roots of the bizarre tree. nourished by its cherry red waters. In less than a minute, or perhaps an entire century later, you find yourself standing back in your original spot, exhilarated and overcome with a kind of euphoria, looking out at the churning room of costumed guests and fantasy beings. All of a sudden, the mood changes to one of anticipation. The dancing crowd instinctively turns to face the entrance of the lavish underground hall. The large wooden doors fly open with ease, and the flock of flowing black shapes funnels into the open space, swirling over the heads of the partiers. The electrically charged ring of darkness breaks apart into glittering orbs that unfurl to the floor as fully formed witches in bejeweled gowns, exquisite pointed hats, and bewitching black masks. Instantly, the room bursts into cheers and the wild reveling resumes. Still starstruck from your dreamlike dance and the atmosphere of this place, you decide to observe and endeavor to take note and remember what you can see happening. From your spot, you pick out from the crowd several whom you believe to be members of the League of Lady Gravediggers. They are smartly dressed in gray denim tailored frock coats that match their eye masks. You suspect you can deduce just who might be Midnight Library staff members and fellow guests, as all of these are cunningly costumed in the guises of well-known creatures and beings from works of dark fantasy. There are grand ghosts and magnificent monsters everywhere. Most certainly, the tall, attractive woman in the green satin gown, with a sizable length of reptilian tail whipping out from beneath it, is Natasha. The mood of the illusory room grows quiet as a refined lady in a full-length Victorian gown and the head of a ram, with hefty curling horns, steps in front of the fountain that surrounds the fancy roots of the tree. She lifts her crimson-colored violin and begins to play. Most of the more otherworldly characters drift to the outer fringe of the crowd, while the black-masked witches and library guests remain in the inner circle. You spot gallant Mr. Darling. A bushy wolf tail stands proudly out from the rear of his lavish dress coat. Several of his dashing brothers are in the mix, all of them elegant in their long-tailed jackets and top hats. From time to time, you see Mr. Darling dance especially close with a mysterious lady in a red cloak and mask, the hem of her black habit just peeping out near the floor. Even in a mask, you easily spy Stephen Strangeways in a black western-style suit. He courteously does a turn with anyone who offers to move to the music with him. The various Red Devils do stand out, as most of them are willing partners to all in the swarm of dancers too. But only Mr. Devil has flames in his eyes that set him apart. He purposefully moves from witch to witch, hoping. You wince as you witness Daisy approach him with familiar warmth, and you're not surprised when he coldly snubs her to peer into the mask of yet another witch. Each alluring witch rebuffs his inspection. You laugh out loud when you see Father Philbrook, who seems to have sprouted real horns for the occasion, joyfully lifting little Irma, dressed as a pink pixie, as his dance partner. And you think, I'll never forget this. As the entrancing music plays, all of the witches begin twirling and moving mysteriously with the strangest synchronicity. All of the guests, human, halfling, spirit, and sprite, dark and light, depart to the outer ring away from the twirling witches. Except one, Daisy, the awkward angel. She moves into the center of the revolving witches, a pure white dot in a sea of black. The witches spin faster and faster around her as she rises from the floor, her angel white gown transforming into glittering black, her halo replaced with a pointed black hat. A din of shock booms in the room as Miranda Merrick lowers to the floor with a flirtatious grin. Welcome, my dear, dear guests, she genially begins. What a magical and revealing evening. I see some of you are incognito, and some of you have shown us exactly who you are. Clearly, most of you know how true is the old adage, be not forgetful to be kind to strangers, for thereby some have entertained witches unawares. Now, to everyone who was kind to me as Daisy, thank you for being the embodiment of the true spirit of the Midnight Library. All those who rejected me as Daisy, please step forward. A strange array of a dozen characters knowingly come forth, the fiery-eyed devil amongst them. He lowers his eyes as Miranda Merrick lifts her chin and states in a comforting tone, I'll only ever say one last thing in your presence.
Sick 'em!
In the blink of an eye, Mr. Darling and his brothers shapeshift and drop to the floor as enormous wolves, leaping and lunging toward the guilty group who spring into a sprint, dashing out through the open doors of the surreal hall. The fearsome wolves viciously tearing after them, driving them into the unknown. Sweetly standing before the hushed horde of hovering sprites, standing specters, and spooky lovely guests, Miranda Merrick calmly asks, Now, where were we? The music rises, and the weird cast of characters hurl into abandoned motion, clapping to the rhythm of the wild music, with you pleasingly caught up in the maelstrom. Everyone and everything moves, dances, and flies in a carousel-like wave of revelry around the tremendous body of the twisted tree roots, whose life-giving fountain has curiously turned blood red. You find yourself twirling in a moving ring of dancers, all taking part in a graceful group waltz, with every other dancer intuitively gliding into the center of the circle, joining their raised hands for a turn. Stepping forth for your turn, you meet with a lady gravedigger, a scarecrow, Stefan Strangeways, and a living skeleton with a permanent grin. Returning to the outer circle, You now dance shoulder to shoulder with a cheerful ghoul, Aunt Natasha.
Miranda Merrick smiles, then winks, and tips her pointed hat at you from across the circle of dancers.
Immersed in a blissful glow, you excitedly stride forward once again to the middle meeting place and raise your hand. A large tan hand brushes yours, and a single blue spark of static electricity zaps between you as you both reach for a can of Brother Burgess's bone broth. You blink awake, realizing you're shopping at Grimm's Grocers. Trying not to look stunned, you produce a breathless smile.
"Oh, I do apologize," croons the familiar voice of Mr. Darling.
Your expression brightens as you look up at him. "Please, take this one and I'll get another," he says, smiling down and handing you the can. In a slate gray evening suit, he looks as handsome as ever, his beard so neatly trimmed. Arrested by his gaze, you hear yourself mumbling courteous small talk up at him. He nods politely, and then asks you point blank if you're attending the upcoming reading on black cats. Puzzled, you shake your head and utter a weak response.
I think so. I think I was invited.
His tone drops, and he looks at you and declares,
"Of course you are."
A wave of tingles raise goosebumps on your skin as you stand there silently. "See you soon, and have a good night," he exclaims as he tucks a second can of broth under a black cloth in his hand basket and calmly strolls away. His presence has left you with the oddest chill, and you immediately miss his company. Your mind fills with a montage, a swirling of memories of evenings spent in the reading room by the fire, listening to the hypnotic stories of Miranda Merrick. The rush of images brings a feeling of dizziness. You recheck your list and steady yourself by grasping the cart handle and head to the checkout. Your cashier, with jet black hair and eyes to match, wears a Grimm's green apron. Her bright orange name tag reads Kathleen. She smiles and says,
"Good evening. Did you find everything you were hoping for?"
Still a little shaken,
I am, yes,
is your awkward reply as you begin to fumble the envelope of coupons in your jittery hands.
"Please let me help you," Kathleen offers.
She gently takes the envelope from your hands, her slim fingers nimbly plucking the coupons from the paper pouch.
"There we are. I got every single one."
"Oh, you're a friend of the Midnight Library, I see," she exclaims, noticing the sticker on the envelope as she passes it back to you.
Oh yes, I'm a patron,"
you readily reply. Her head turns sharply and she stares straight at you, her charcoal eyes warming as she smiles and says, "Excellent." She folds your receipt, lifts your bags into your hands, and politely says, "Have a wonderful night, and thank you for shopping at Grimm's." As you walk towards the exit, through the large plate glass windows, you can just see Mr. Darling stepping out from under the store's orange and green striped awning. Suddenly, the black cat
leaps from the awning's edge and deftly lands upon his lofty shoulder. Without flinching, he walks off into the darkness. And you think to yourself, I can't wait to get back to the reading room. I wish they would throw some kind of strange party. I'd totally go if I was invited.
Well, madam, shall we begin planning our masked ball? I've been itching to cut a rug, you know.
Oh, I dreamt we'd already had it, Mr. Darling. And I attended it, dressed, of all things, as an angel.
I'm fairly certain that was a nightmare, madam.
You and your brother certainly made it that way for some, darling. You terrorized a dozen people.
Lavender stationery and cursed stamps all right with you?
That sounds divine, Mr. Darling.
Oh!
This special reading in the Midnight Library was brought to you by me, Miranda Merrick. It was presented to our fabulous patrons early and ad-free. They get everything first. They are the reason the library stays open and the ghoulies get fed. We ask that you please consider becoming a patron so you too can step beyond the cordoned off areas relatively safely. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. Thank you.